Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Touchdown! I don't believe it!
You're listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Joe Thomas joins us on the show this morning. Hello, Joe.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you guys this morning?
Well, I wasn't very good. Lima is just thrilled. He is a peach with a bunch of ice cream right now.
Well, not only that, I got my father-in-law continuing to beg me to get free meat from Joe Thomas. He wants some of the meat from his farm.
Well, the best way for him to get free meat is for you to buy some.
And gift
that would
it.
Take you getting that postal digger out and pulling that wallet out of the back pocket, something you hadn't done in a little while.
It's about time. All right, so what did you think, Joe? Was it surprising to you that Miles took the time to say things he says he's already expressed to the organization, the fact that he went public with it on Friday?
I guess I'm not super surprised. I feel like maybe that was the next step in his mind, right, of taking it public, right? If you've got a beef with a player or a coach, the professional way is to try to close their door and go in their office and sort things out like adults, like professionals, and see if you can come to some type of understanding. And if that doesn't work, and the player, let's say that you feel like that player is maybe in the wrong with how they're acting in the locker room or their study habits or how they're playing on the field, the next step is sort of like you call them out in the media, you call them out on the carpet, and you see if some public humiliation is what it takes to get them to change their actions.
Did you ever feel that way as a player during your time?
You know, I didn't feel the way Miles did because I never really allowed myself, my mind, to go down that thought process, right? I think a couple things for offensive linemen, you know, we call ourselves mushrooms, you know, we're in the mushroom club because in order for us to be at our best, we've got to love a little bit of misery. We got to love having people throw poo on us, put us in a dark closet and expect to have great results. You got to love the misery of the day-to-day monotony of being an offensive lineman, not having any stats except for bad ones, penalties, false starts, sacks allowed. And I think for me during my career, I wanted to maximize. I wanted to be the best player I possibly could be. I wanted to be the best left tackle I could for the Cleveland Browns. And I think for me to be able to do that, I always thought as a blue-collar worker, I couldn't think anything above what was right in front of me and what was my job on that play and that practice. How did I get the most out of myself? And that was not worrying about things above me, out of my control. And I really embraced that. I thought that was probably the best thing that I learned from Romeo Crennel, who's a Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells' disciple, you know, the old do your job mantra. That was really beaten into our heads. And I think it really did help me become the best offensive lineman, but it also never made me ever wonder about what it would be like somewhere else. You know, I'm not the bubble boy sitting at the window wondering what it'd be like to go outside and play with the kids and have a great time, right? I was just focused on my job. And so I think it's not a disrespect to Miles because he is thinking bigger, because I think it's different when you're not an offensive lineman. Like, for instance, if you're a receiver, if you don't have a good quarterback to throw you the ball, how do you ever maximize yourself as a receiver? How do you ever get the recognition that you feel like maybe you deserve if somebody's not throwing you the ball? And I think defensive end is not, you're not getting the ball thrown to you, but when you're in games that you're losing, the other team's just going to run the ball. They're going to have a chance to double-team you, and you don't have those one-on-one opportunities to be able to get sacks and to maybe maximize your legacy. And I'm sure that's part of it for Miles. And I think being on the cusp of getting to 100 sacks and how quickly could he get there, that was sort of on everybody's mind, and certainly it was on Miles' mind in the last few weeks. And I'm sure that opportunity to sort of reflect on his place in history as a pass rusher, as a defensive end, was something that he was thinking about. And I think the comments coming up right now, the way they did, was probably a part of that, because he's thinking, all right, if I want to have 150, 200 sacks, whatever it is, whatever his goals are throughout his career, he's thinking, hey, I got to be on a good team who's going to give me an opportunity to get one-on-one looks, who's going to give me an opportunity in the fourth quarter where we're winning, where a team has to throw the ball and they can't just double and triple team me all day. And so I can totally understand that he has maybe different considerations about his career and his ability to maximize him as a defensive end and his legacy within the NFL that an offensive lineman just wouldn't have.
Joe Thomas with us. I think that's great perspective. I am interested to see what this means for the organization, because the organization would tell you, well, we've always been trying to win. In the seasons that it didn't work out, we can point to injuries. Obviously, the assessment of evaluation on the quarterback they brought in has not worked out, and it's gone south in a big way. How do you think the organization, when they hear him go public, do you think it accelerates any timelines? Do you think it adds to any desperation to make a move? Because there's the good and the bad of that as well. If they think, oh my God, we got to get a quarterback right now, it has to be immediately, it's Kirk Cousins, let's go get him, that can also cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think all of a sudden the team was like, oh, put that on the Christmas list. Like, we didn't even think about getting a quarterback, but Miles said we should have a good quarterback, so let's do that. I mean, they're trying to get a great quarterback, but in the NFL, you're bound by the constraints of the salary cap, and obviously our salary cap is a little bit on the naughty list right now after the Deshaun Watson contract. And so it's a challenge, but I think players and franchise and fans, to some extent, a lot of times have different timelines. They may have the same goal of winning a Super Bowl, but as a player, you might be saying, hey, I got 2 years and then I'm out of this league. Whereas an organization, especially a team like the Browns, who have looked long-term in the past, look back to the end of my career where they were willing to go 1-31 to save draft picks and salary cap space for the future, they may have a different timeline. And they may be saying, yeah, we would like to win a Super Bowl too, but we think the odds of us winning a Super Bowl are better if we think about things in like a 5-year window or an 8-year window or whatever it looks like, whereas a player goes, hey, my window's 2 years, and if we're not thinking about maximizing to win a Super Bowl in 2 years, then I think you should get rid of me. And certainly I think part of what's probably going through Miles' head is, hey, this is me throwing a shot over the bow of the team, yes, but also I think this gives the team a little bit of cover. So Miles, I think, is maybe doing some work for the team, like, hey, if I'm not in your plan, it's okay if you do decide that the best interest of the team is to trade me in the offseason or to do something with the value that my contract and me as a player brings. Because I think if Miles had not said anything and the fans were wondering, hey, we don't know if Miles really wants to be traded because he's always said he wants to be here, you know, I think this gives the team a little bit of cover with Miles coming out publicly and saying, hey, if we don't have the same timeline, I'm okay if you guys trade me. It gives them cover to be able to do something with him and give him the flexibility to use Miles as a poker chip. So I think it was probably best for everybody that this was said, because now team and player both have maximum flexibility to reach their goals.
Now, see, it kind of worked out for you, Joe. You ended up staying. You did not go public. You did not ask officially for a trade. We know a little bit about the background of the Denver Broncos situation and Peyton Manning towards the end. If Myles Garrett called you, what would be your advice? Because you don't seem to have any resentment at all about staying the course, sticking it out on the Cleveland Browns, and you have a great relationship with the organization.
Yeah, and I mean, would I have loved to win a Super Bowl somewhere else? I mean, yeah, but then that meant I'd have to go somewhere else. And I loved my time in Cleveland, and I never was a what-if guy. I never really wondered if the grass was greener anywhere else. And you know, plenty of friends that have won Super Bowls, and I don't think that they are any happier where they are because they won a Super Bowl versus me. Now, I'll never know. It's not like I can go back in my life and say, like, oh, I won a Super Bowl and I could do that thing and then compare what it is right now and the life I'm living right now versus that. I think that certainly for some people, the Super Bowl is the only feather in their cap. You know, guys that maybe were just kind of bit players in a roster and won a Super Bowl, and hey, I got a ring, that's cool. You know, that's sort of like what they get announced as, Super Bowl champion, whatever. And, you know, maybe they didn't really have a big impact on the winning of the Super Bowl.
Joe, you're saying right now on our radio station on 92.3 The Fan, Monday morning, after Miles made those comments, you're saying Super Bowl's overrated.
No, that's not exactly what I'm saying, but I appreciate you making that my narrative. My point is, if you're Myles Garrett and you are the guy that gets the winning sack in the Super Bowl, you know, life might be a little bit different. And so I can see how he could build that fantasy up into his mind and say, that is what I need to be able to accomplish to fulfill my hopes and dreams. And for an offensive lineman, not many guys win the Super Bowl. You lose the Super Bowl, but it's not like you could have that defining moment in your career as the guy that, you know, caught the winning Super Bowl pass or threw the winning Super Bowl touchdown. And I think for me, the dream of being part of an organization building from the ground up, winning its first Super Bowl of all time as a Cleveland Brown, that was more meaningful and worth chasing for me rather than going somewhere else and trying to hitch my wagon to a team that was already going there to win the Super Bowl. So I was willing to risk not ever winning a Super Bowl to be able to do it in Cleveland and to be able to give the franchise that I started with an opportunity to win its first Super Bowl ever. To me, that would be meaningful. To me, that would be, I would say, you don't have to introduce me as Hall of Famer. You can introduce me as one of the key cogs in the unit that won the first Super Bowl for this proud franchise that has all these championships but had never won a Super Bowl. To me, that was worth fighting for. That was worth being around for, and that was worth risking never winning a Super Bowl and going through 1-31 for. And so I don't know if that's everybody's calculation. Like I said, if you're Miles, like, you could get the game-winning sack and be like, yeah, even though I wasn't here when it was built, I won this game for him. And so that maybe that's a little bit more meaningful for Peyton Manning to be able to go win another Super Bowl in Denver, even though he wasn't like the dude. He was still the quarterback of the Super Bowl winning team. Like, you have much more impact when you're at that position and you can feel a lot differently about winning that game. But for an offensive lineman, I think the ultimate for us is being there, being in the locker room and building something from the ground up and doing something that nobody's ever done in Cleveland, winning a Super Bowl.
So, Joe Thomas joining us here on the show. Do you have like a direction you think this team should go right now in the off season?
Well, I don't know how realistic it is, but I think certainly bringing in maybe Kirk Cousins could be a good option for us and for him next year. And that's what you have to look at, is because you don't have the salary cap space. Like, who are you going to be able to bring in a quarterback that's willing to play for cheap that could still give you good quarterback play that you could use the nucleus, the rest of the good players that we have on this team? Because we still have a good team. People forget. We were a good team last year with Joe Flacco as our quarterback because we got a lot of good pieces. We got a great secondary. We got good linebackers. I know JOK's been hurt, but, like, he's a great linebacker in this league. He's very versatile. We got great pass rush. We can stop the run. We got a really up-and-coming running back in Jerome Ford. Jerry Judy's breaking out. We got David Njoku still playing great football. We got a good offensive line. I think hopefully we get DeJuan Jones back. So I think it's pretty easy to build up a belief in your head that, like, hey, if we find a good quarterback, we could be a contender. And I think you can sell that to Kirk Cousins potentially and say, hey, look, we can't pay you a lot, but nobody else is going to pay you a ton of money right now. But if you come to Cleveland, you put together a good season, even though you're not getting paid a lot, you get an opportunity to make one more contract somewhere else. And I think maybe that is a good sales pitch, probably as good as any in the NFL and probably our best option, because I'm not a draft guru, but you know, you listen to the guys and it doesn't sound like there's a potential game changer, at least in year one or two, that's going to be available in the draft this year.
Do you think Kevin can get him fixed, Cousins?
Because
it was bad this earlier this year.
Yeah, I think it's bad, and I think part of that was probably a little bit of the Achilles, and I think even though as you get older, it's a little bit more difficult to come back from those tendon injuries. I mean, I tore my tricep tendon, and even though I retired after that, it took me a couple years before I was even able to, like, pick up a 12-ounce beer with that left arm. But I think with another year behind him of rehab and practice and getting ready, I think the Achilles will be a little bit more healthy, and give him the ability to run some of those bootlegs, to run some of the play actions that he's been so good at throughout his career. And I think that's what Kevin's always done best. And I think if we improve our run game a little bit and we just commit to that a little bit more, more of the under center stuff, go back to the old Kevin Stefanski stuff, I think there's an ability, at least in my mind, I think there's enough belief there to feel like, hey, we can put together a pretty good team, and I think we could fix what had ailed Kirk Cousins when he was down in Atlanta last year or this year.
The great Joe Thomas, the immortal one, joins us right now on the show. Joe, we thank you very much for the time. Have a wonderful Christmas to you and yours. All the best.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks for having me on.
The great Joe Thomas on the show. I haven't been wild. I wanted to be wild. You know, Aditi brought up the Ken Dorsey thing, and I'm like, I think Aditi just said the quiet part out loud. With the Ken Dorsey play calling, where she's like, you know, some of the things just didn't make sense on Sunday for Dorian Thompson Robinson. And I thought Ken Dorsey, there's a couple of games, I don't know, maybe I'm being too hard. It kind of washes over you, all the stuff going on with the Browns. And I did. I tried to take notes in vain of the game on Sunday. I don't know why I did. Because you're trying to learn about some things, and you are in evaluation mode. It's hard. It's really hard. Everybody's down about it. You look at social media. Everybody's mad. This is not good. This is not good. That's why I want to spend some more time on Jared Allen and the half court behind the back shot yesterday. They have a chance, though. If you haven't been wild, would you bring Ken Dorsey back as a play caller in 2025? If you're going to bring back Kevin, what are you going to do?
No, I would not.
Okay.
But that's coming from me, who didn't like the hire to begin with, didn't understand the hire.
This is your issue here, buddy. This is your issue. If you don't retain Ken Dorsey and you bring back Kevin Stefanski, and Kevin Stefanski were to be the one to call plays, don't you show everybody how powerless the head coach is then?
Which I thought they already kind of did this last offseason.
Yeah, but you could always. But remember, they said he made the decisions to do this. Whether or not you believe him, that's in the eye of the listener or the ear of the listener. I would imagine the majority of people don't believe him about that. There's no reason to. But Anthony, I ask you, does that not give you your smoking gun of just how powerless he is? I mean, you let go of Alex Van Pelt, who they seem to get along. You let go of Stump Mitchell, who's a tough-talking running back coach. You bring in these new coaches. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked out. Then you're already moving from Ken Dorsey. You're going, well, who's calling the shots here? Because then it's just like, well, you've made this decision. Then you render Kevin Stefanski powerless. And then I go, are we crazy here? Because this is where it's like some change would have to happen. Who made that decision then? Is it the man in San Diego? I don't know what he does.
Well, it's getting annoying. By the way, this is part of what's annoying, Kenny, is that
to Browns fans, is we don't know whose role is responsible for what.
You're exactly right. The autopsy that we do every single time just turns into us going, well, I don't know who ordered that.
It's all theory.
And because they don't communicate that stuff, and maybe to them it insulates them, but in the other way, it makes us distrust all of them. So I don't think it's a good move. The other thing is, I keep watching these games, and the season's been over for a long time. We all get that. So we're looking for little. We want to be entertained. We know we're going to lose. So how can we be entertained? Oh, okay, Jerry Judy's doing some things. Okay, Mike Hall got his first start. He seems to be playing well. McGuire, you keep bringing up, is showcasing. I am watching our head coach on the sidelines, And am I the only one doing this, or are you noticing it too?
Let me see. What are you talking
about?
When
a play goes bad, it seems to me
he looks more reactionary because that's not the play that he called, right?
Yes, because it's somebody else's play, and he looks disgusted.
Yep.
But he couldn't take over the the season's over. He's not going to take over the play calling.
You never once saw him mouth to the skies, what the F are we doing?
Yes.
When he was calling, now, that was probably because he was too buried in thought about what he was going
to
call
the next play.
Kevin was certainly not a perfect play caller. We're not saying that. But you
he
are right about
so
that.
Agitated.
Oh, boy. I'm glad you noticed. I'm glad you noticed. I noticed that we were glad each other noticed.
And you know, it's left for us to interpret. Is he agitated that somebody didn't get lined up again? Or somebody didn't make the read at the line of scrimmage again?
Uh-huh.
But Ken Dorsey is the guy that's obviously talking to the quarterback up until how much time left on the play clock and making sure that they're doing everything they can up until they can't have control over it anymore.
Hmm.
And so Kevin just looks like a different guy.
That's a great point.
When that stuff's not going down the way he would prefer it.
We talk about how he doesn't show emotion. Fans get mad about that. Fans get mad at things because why? They're not in control of things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're not in control of the situation. So he looks like us. He didn't call that play. He sees this play going awry, and I bet in his head he's going, why are you putting him in this situation? Why are we calling this? Why are we doing that? Why are we muddying the water? Now, that sounds like a great big giant fat defense of Kevin Stefanski. It is, and he's the head coach of the football team. But you've made us question what he's in charge of and what he's not in charge of. Because we sit here and we go, two-time coach of the year over and over and over again until it means nothing anymore. But if we don't know what he's in charge of, then we've made him out to be a feckless head coach, and then it's like, two-time coach of the year for what? You're not in control of your own program. David in Macedonia, you're first up on the fan. Hello, David.
Hello, David.
Hello. Hello, boys. How are you?
Yes, David.
Both you guys.
Same to you, David.
Sports.
In your
Merry
young
Christmas.
Families.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate
great
it.
Great stuff.
Too
well,
young to hate me.
Here's the, what's that?
Too young to resent me. At this point,
mine's starting on it. It's a good feeling.
Well, getting to our marvelous football franchise, you know, I really feel bad for Kevin in a lot of ways. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. But I think with the right things in place, he could win. I think he's already proven that. But the problem here is, and we're all starting to get on board with it, is laser eyes. I mean, I think there's been 34 draft picks, and I could be wrong by one or two, and he's extended two guys. That's not a good record.
It's not.
What's that?
It's David, it's not. It's not. I'm agreeing with you. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, that is disgraceful. Well, now, I think Cam Ward is the only guy I'd be interested in, and we're probably not going to get him unless the New York football Giants can get a W here soon, which who knows. But because you're gonna probably end up with the third pick because, you know, Tennessee and Jacksonville are going to play each other. Somebody's going to win, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And are the Raiders ahead of us now? Yeah, I mean, it didn't matter if we're tied with them. We get the pick because we lost to the Raiders and the Giants. Never thought we'd celebrate that. Now we're celebrating it. And the Patriots play the Bills on the last game of the season, and the Bills won't play anybody. So who knows? But it's, you know, Cam Ward or nobody. I don't think they can afford Darnold, although I certainly would try.
If I were Minnesota, David, I would just, and David, I got to let you go because I want to fit a couple of more in. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Thank you for the kind words. If I were Minnesota, people bring up Sam Darnold. If I'm Minnesota, I'm keeping Sam Darnold. I got J.J. McCarthy technically on a 5-year deal if I want to keep him on a 5-year deal. Sam Darnold has such a hot hand. If he goes out there and he sucks it up in the postseason, which is a possibility, maybe there's a different discussion. But I think that he's played himself out of the price range for us. Kevin O'Connell's working well with him. If Sam Darnold were to become a conversation, maybe he does. I'd love to have that conversation. But again, I think the problem, and we're going to have to figure this out here, guys, over the next couple of months, because you just specified it there. We're hitting it dead on. Your problem may be bigger than any sort of a bridge quarterback. we don't know who's in charge of what. And if they let go of if Ken Dorsey's gone and they get rid of Andy Dickerson or they let go of other people, like, we're going to have to ask these questions. Who's in charge of the front office? Who's in charge of the coaching staff? Because if Kevin were in charge of his coaching staff, you're firing coaches and you're letting go of coaches the next year after you've hired them. Why are you the head coach of the football team? That's interesting.
But it is the final home game of the season, and Mary Kay Cabot broke some pretty big news when she said that Dorian Thompson-Robinson had that calf injury in Sunday's loss. And right now, Mary Kay Cabot for the PlainDealerCleveland.com joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Mary Kay. How are you?
Hello, Mary Kay.
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Doing well.
Who's playing quarterback on Sunday?
Are you available?
Wheel of quarterback.
You know, as of right now, I'm going to guess that Dorian will play, because when I asked him about that after the game, he basically said, come hell or high water, I'm getting out there and playing. So I have a feeling he's going to do everything that he possibly can to get out there and play in this football game. And then if for some reason he can't finish the game, then they'll go ahead and I would think put Bailey Zappe in there. But right now, I would go with Dorian.
Do they need to pick up a quarterback and maybe put one on the practice squad?
You know, I think they're okay, because okay. If they have Jameis as their inactive third QB and he had to go in a pinch, he could probably do that. So we'll find out as the week goes on. Now, we are not out there tomorrow. We don't have them on Christmas Day tomorrow, so we won't know too much about who's practicing or who's not practicing tomorrow. But, you know, by Thursday, I think we'll probably have a pretty good idea of who will be available.
How do you think Kevin Stefanski felt about DTR's performance on Sunday?
Well, he doesn't like interceptions, I can tell you that much. And, you know, that's just not going to fly. So that's got to stop. That's why Jameis Winston got benched in the first place. So they definitely have to get a handle on that. It'll be a lot easier to do that if David Njoku can play, if Cedric Tillman can play, because Jerry Jeudy was covered a lot and double covered a lot, and he didn't have a whole lot of places to go with the football. So that didn't help matters, and we'll have to see how that goes. But I think that Dorian showed some things. He showed that he's got good mobility. He showed some escapability. He showed a strong arm, although at times I think he needs to take some heat off the ball so that he throws a little bit more of a catchable ball, especially in shorter situations. But, you know, he showed some things, but he's got to play a little bit more within himself, a little bit more under control. And I think with time, you'll be able to see that skill set come forth a little bit more.
Mary Kay, we happened to talk about this on the pregame show the other day. I was just curious, and the Pro Bowl voting, what just ended on Sunday or yesterday. Just your thoughts on Pro Bowlers from this team. And we were kicking around, will they have three? Will they have four? How many could they possibly have? What do you think? How many Pro Bowlers do you think the Browns have right now?
Well, obviously, Myles Garrett is a Pro Bowler, and I think that Denzel Ward needs to be a Pro Bowler this year. I think he's playing as well as I've ever seen him play. He locked in. And I think he's having a really phenomenal season. And then, of course, I always look at Joel Bitonio as a perennial Pro Bowler. He should always be in there. So he's another one. And then Wyatt's season was a little cut short by injury, so I don't know if he'll have a chance to make it this year, but maybe he'll get some consideration, and deservedly so. So those are the guys that I would look at.
Yeah, the only other guy I would take might put on that list is Corey. I mean, he has had so many more punts than anybody else in the NFL. And, I mean, he's been good this year, really good, I thought.
Yeah, he is really, really good. And he's placing a lot of them in that coffin corner, doing a really, really nice job. He is having a career season. You're right about that. So he definitely would deserve it.
It'd be hard to see five Pro Bowlers out from a three-win team. I'm trying to equal that out. Like, the list you gave me is the same one that I kind of had. But then I'm like, are they really going to make – five guys, Pro Bowlers, off a team that only has three wins? That, I think, is the difficult part.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, I think that, you know, that situation with the Browns being at 3-12 will really, really hurt Miles in terms of NFL Defensive Player of the Year again. Mm. Even if he wins the sack title, I think it might be hard for him to repeat. Now, because he's Miles, maybe not. Maybe he will get that kind of recognition. But 3-12 doesn't help at all.
Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Browns announced today that they have signed kicker Andre Schmidt to the practice squad. He was in the UFL, the St. Louis Blackhawks, this season. Is this a kicking competition now for Dustin Hopkins this week? Are we back into the same thing that we were with Riley Patterson, where we'll see what this looks like and maybe give Dustin Hopkins a week off? Or if we see Andre Schmidt, it basically tells you Dustin Hopkins is no more.
I think it means that there's a good chance that Andre is going to kick in this game. I think they thought that Dustin had solved his mechanical issue, and that's not the case. If you're going to go out there and miss your only extra point of the game, then you're still in that slump. You're not out of it yet. So I do think that there's a good chance that he will get another week off.
What is Kevin watching right now? What do you think Kevin's looking for?
Well, there are a lot of things that they need to look at, not just for the rest of this season, of course, but for the future. So I think you're looking at what can some of these young guys do. Mike Woods had a little bit of a tough game. Can he bounce back from that a little bit? What can Jamari Thrash do? I think you're going to be looking at more of Mike Hall, who has come on strong lately. I think younger guys also like Ronnie Hickman, who might be able to win a starting job next year. These are things that you're going to be wanting to look at. Isaiah McGuire continues to come through with impact plays, and that's important. So this is a chance for a lot of these young guys to put out some good film, and maybe even to a certain extent some of the older guys too, because you have to figure out if those guys are going to come back. So I think these are some of the things that they're going to be looking at over the next couple games.
How warm is the seat of Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry right now, in your opinion, Mary Kay?
Well, it just seems like everything that I've been hearing, they're fine and they're good to go. If anything changes on that front, I guess at this point I would have to say that I'm pretty surprised and pretty shocked about it, because it really does seem like they are moving forward, and that Jimmy Haslam intends to keep Andrew and Kevin. So that's what I believe will happen.
Do you believe the seat is warm for either Bubba Ventrone or Ken Dorsey?
I do think that there could be some changes in the coaching staff after the season, because there always are changes in the coaching staff. So obviously special teams has not gone well this whole entire season. I don't know if they'll attribute that to all of the injuries and personnel changes, or if they'll seek to do something there. I don't know what the feeling is going to be on Ken Dorsey. I do think that some of that will be dictated by what kind of quarterback do you want? What kind of scheme do you want to run? If it's not one that aligns or matches up with what Ken Dorsey does well, then, you know, who knows what the thinking is there. I don't know what the plans are in terms of the coaching staff, but I would expect that there will be some changes in the organization somewhere.
I'm just kind of trying to digest everything. And then, you know, we talk about this stuff all the time, where everything seems to be calm, and then somehow, some way, now this year it won't be on the bus back from Baltimore, but something crazy always seems to happen on the bus back from Pittsburgh or somewhere where they're coming back the last week of the season. So I guess sometimes you just never know with what's going to happen. But I agree with everything you're saying and what I think you're hearing. I guess maybe I'm prepared that if they get stuck on three wins, you know how hard that is for an NFL head coach to survive three wins, even if they have two coaching of the year titles. Like, if you take a step back from it, if they decided to make major changes, it probably wouldn't be that insane.
Well, again, we don't know where they're going with that, but I do think Myles Garrett threw a whole new element into the whole situation by basically throwing down the gauntlet and saying, show me what you have. Show me how we are going to be able to contend for the Super Bowl again next season. I need to see it if I want to be back here. They were such strong comments that he made last Friday. And I think that everyone should snap to attention about that, because he's not messing around with this. He really means business with this, and he's going to need to see and know that they have a good quarterback plan, and that they are not going into rebuild, and that they can come back next year and say what they've said pretty much every year after the, 1-31, and that is that they are challenging for the playoffs and they are trying to make it to a Super Bowl. If they can't say that next year, then he really is going to explore his options.
Yeah, how much do you think that conversation kind of supercharges his way to either a contract extension or leaving? I mean, part of this, I think, has to be he's looking at his contract saying, look, if you guys want to try to get something, I don't want to lose. And I don't blame, I don't think there's a fan in Northeast Ohio that blames him. I'm just wondering what the Browns are going to try to sell him to say, you know what, let's do this. And then is he going to turn around and go, okay, I believe in what you're saying, I'm going to sign an extension?
Well, I don't know about the extension because he has a contract through 2026 at $25 million a year. So I don't know if an extension is in the offing unless he demands something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he is going to require the knowledge of the quarterback plan because that's the number one thing that they have to do. And if he is satisfied that whoever's coming in here is going to be able to play winning ball for them, then I think that he'll be okay. But I do think that, in some ways you can look at it and think a trade of Miles could be beneficial to both sides, but I don't think anybody wants it to come to that at all.
Yeah, Mary Kay, there's something about trading Hall of Fame players that just doesn't sit well with me. Like, as funny as that statement sounds, and especially Hall of Fame players who are playing at the level of Myles Garrett, no matter what the return is, it's never going to equal what Myles Garrett can give this team. And having Myles Garrett makes the job of the quarterback easier. So I don't understand how moving forward would involve, or I should say moving forward closer to a Super Bowl would involve not having Myles Garrett on this roster. It's like a catch-22.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive. But when you consider that if you could get two first-round picks for him, that you could parlay that into an excellent starting quarterback, then that changes the game a little bit. But I still agree with you. I don't think that is the most prudent way to go about it. I do think that they can find a quarterback somehow, some way. Right now they have the 5th overall pick, and that could improve by the time they get to the end of the season. And then you can also look for one in free agency in a trade. And I think it's much easier to find a good winning starting quarterback now than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Mary Kay, just your thoughts on these games being played on Christmas tomorrow. And, these four teams had to flip things around from Saturday to be able to play on Wednesday. I still feel like it's such a short turnaround, even though they played on Saturday. But I'm wondering how the NFL is looking at these games and if they feel like they're going to want to do this again in the future.
I think they will. Multiple maximum exposure for the NFL is what they want, and I don't think they're going to go backwards from this. I think this is going to be the wave of the future, and even as they move forward, you'll see games on other days as well in the middle of the week, and they'll just have to figure it out because they are branching out into global markets, and then you've got the betting, and when you can get more eyes on a game, they believe that that's good for everyone. So I think that this is how it's going to be, and I actually like having sports on holidays. I know some people might not, but I do enjoy it myself. I'm looking forward to the games, and we'll just see how it all plays out.
Mary Kay, have an amazing Christmas with your family, and enjoy the next 24, 48 hours here before you got to get back into work mode, and I'm sure work mode never stops, but enjoy the holiday with your family, my friend. Thank you, Mary
Kay. Definitely, Mary Kay. Thank you very much for joining us, and a very Merry Christmas to you and the family.
You too. Happy holidays, guys.
All right, take care, Mary Kay. Mary Kay Cabot from the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com.
Get his thoughts on everything that is going on out there in Berea. I'm fascinated to what he did when he heard Bubba Ventrone say what he said. Because if I know Darryl the way he did, I have a feeling he had he probably smiled politely. He probably handled it well. And I am fascinated to know the thoughts that were going on in the back of his head when he heard that there's a potential possibility that Dustin Hopkins could sit the next 2 weeks. And so we now go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We bring in our Cleveland Sports Beat reporter. He is Daryl Ryder, and he joins us on The Fan. What's up, D? How are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, buddy. All right, what did you think when Bubba Ventrone said, we might give Dustin Hopkins 2 weeks off? That's an option.
It'd certainly be understandable, and you also don't want to make the mistake of Dustin Hopkins actually making a few kicks, right?
Daryl, I heard that and I went, what? We're going to give him now 2 weeks off the whole offseason on top of that? Did he find a deal on kayak for flights to Cabo? I don't know.
Apparently not, because Dustin was on the practice field today. So,
oh, that's a win.
Along with the new guy, Schmidt, which is an interesting spelling of Schmidt. But
it is an interesting spelling of Schmidt. You are correct. It took me a minute. I looked at that. I'm like, how in the world? Okay, whatever.
Yeah, I appreciate them putting the phonetic pronunciation with it. But, yeah, you know, I mean, God forbid, you don't want Dustin to accidentally make a field goal or two here in these last 2 weeks. So maybe it does make sense to go ahead and give this UFL kicker a shot here, see what he can do. And, you know, if it's not great, it's not a big deal. And if you do, okay, fine, but whatever. But, you know, they did just, I think that what you're seeing here as they go through this process, Dan, is like they can't move on right now from Dustin. They just gave him that 3-year, $15 million contract extension, so they just can't cut him, right? I mean, you would see in years past, and this isn't just like a Browns thing. This is just around the NFL. When you have a kicker struggling, they just move on. They cut the guy, they waive him, whatever, and they just, you know, they move on. And obviously, they're not doing that. That's why you're hearing Bubba Ventrone. You've heard Kevin Stefanski all, you know, basically say, hey, he's our kicker. We're going to work with him through this whole thing, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the reality is in a normal situation, they would have cut him already. But because of, you know, that contract extension he just signed before the season, they I don't think they can.
The whole thing is just amazing, man. Like, I listened to Bubba Ventrone talk about this with Dustin Hopkins, and it makes me feel like he's, like, fighting the flu. Like, the way Bubba Ventrone lays it out.
I appreciate the time you took to listen to Bubba Ventrone today. So that is dedication on your part.
Hey, man, this is what we're here for. No, it was one of those fearless leader Keith Britton came running in here and said, oh, you got to hear this. And so, yeah. And so we played it. And I'm always appreciative when fearless leader comes running in going, oh, you got to hear this.
Well, he also had to hear what Ken Dorsey had to say about Dorian Thompson-Robinson as an NFL starting quarterback.
I was just about to head that direction with you, and it's sounding like he is healthy and good to go for Sunday. Yay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's healthy or not, but he was out there throwing footballs today. So they're going to run him out there. Good luck. May the force be with you.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly how I feel with it. May the spirit of Santa help you come over. And boy, I got nothing. Good luck, bud. Yeah, I hope you do well. I hope you're successful, because if you could somehow find magically the ability to move at the same speed as the defense and the players around you and to process at that level, you are the path of least resistance forward.
Well, and if you watched Hard Knocks, right, and Jameis is talking to Dorian about, hey, on Mondays I watch this, on Tuesdays I watch this, on Wednesdays I do this, on Thursdays I do this, right? And, like, you just see the expression on Dorian's face, and he's just like, look, dude, I really appreciate everything you're telling me, but I don't have the first clue what you're talking about. Like, he just had that look on his face. But, you know, for me, like, Ken, it's not so much what Ken Dorsey said, which wasn't a whole lot, but you know, when Mary Kay asked that question today, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, she essentially asked, hey, do you see starting quarterback potential in him? And it took Ken Dorsey 10 seconds to him and Hahn get to, well, you know, I'm really focused on the Miami Dolphins this week and what we have to do to be successful and this, that, and the other. Right. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know, right? Because the answer to that, if you legit do see, feel, observe, whatever, that he can, you're like, yeah, you know, okay, he's young. He's a young player, a little rough around the edges. We're working with him, you know, teaching him a few things, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you definitely see that there's some talent and some ability there, right? That's how you answer that question if you actually think that he can be a quarterback. But when you just him and ha for a few seconds before games, you're, well, I just kind of am focused on what we're going to do against the Miami Dolphins. I think that answers everything and basically confirms what I, you know, have been saying for the last week. He's not an NFL quarterback. So he's a nice kid. It's nothing personal. Great kid, but he's just he's not an NFL caliber quarterback. He looks that way, and when you have a performance that he had against arguably one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL on Sunday in Cincinnati, like, the writing's on the wall, right? You have to call it the way you see it, and that's what I try to do. But you know, they're going to roll him out there to give him an opportunity and also to give the Browns an opportunity to lose a game and get a better draft pick.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Daryl Ryder, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He is out in Berea. Jim Schwartz spoke today as well about the Myles Garrett situation. What stood out to you about that?
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't want to get a whole lot into, you know, what Myles had to say or any motivation behind what Myles had to say last week. But you know, he did make mention of the fact that, you know, we're all professionals. This isn't an easy time of year. It's easy to go out there when you're playing for something and the stakes are high when you're going into games. But, hey, we all have jobs to do. We still have to coach. We still have to play. And, you know, Myles' production hasn't dropped off. His production, maybe from a statistical standpoint, might be a little down. But when you go deep and you just compare film against film from last year, the production is essentially the same from Myles. So yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to glean from that, because Schwartz, that's one thing since he's taken over as defensive coordinator. He's always careful to stay in his lane as the defensive coordinator. He makes it a point not to speak out of turn, and making sure he leaves things to whether, in this case, Myles Garrett to speak for himself or head coach Kevin Stefanski to speak for the team aspect of things. But, I mean, Jim's been around a long time. He gets it. He knows. And as he said, it's been a disappointing season for everybody. And so their responsibility right now is to try and finish this season as best as they can. That is the job that is in front of them at the moment.
So, Daryl, I tossed out a little bit earlier my if I was Andrew Berry, my plan to keep Myles Garrett, like what I would tell him after he came out and said, hey, I need a plan here. And frankly, the entire fan base is like, hey, I need a plan here too, if you don't mind, if we could sit in that meeting with you.
Well, so, I don't know if the fan base needs a plan, because the fan base has been hearing plans since 1999, and none of them have worked. Not even this most recent rebuild, the burn it down to the studs plan from 2016 and 2017. It didn't work, right? I mean, they still don't have a franchise quarterback. They're still not a perennial contender. They certainly are not a Super Bowl contender. They're light years away from that. I mean, that's what yesterday's games showed me, just sitting in my recliner. Watching them, they're light years away from the Baltimore Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs when you're talking about being a legit true contender. So fans have been hearing plans since 99. I think what the fans want to see is, yeah, okay, you can draw up all the plans you want. Can we actually see a plan work? That's what fans, I think, want right now. They want a plan that actually works to be implemented and for this franchise to start winning games. I mean, they won, I think, 141 games since 1999. And they've lost close to 250. Yeah, like it's bad. I have to go back and check my sheet because I was updating it the other day. That's why that number popped into my head. But and I saw the clip of Tim Couch's Hail Mary in New Orleans that won their first game back in 1999. They won 140 games since that moment. Like and I got to go back and look to be – you know, because people always say, oh, Daryl, you're always going back to the 99 and you're just piling on. No, it's been consistently bad. That's why I keep going back to 99, because it hasn't mattered who the coach is. It doesn't matter who the GM is. It doesn't matter who the owner is. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. This is a massively below 500 franchise that just never wins. And, you know, Kevin Stefanski's the winningest head coach since 1999, and he's two games below 500 overall.
Yeah. The whole thing, though, with it, D, is I can let my past be a lesson to my future, but I can't let my past be an effect of my future. My future needs to be something
100%.
Bright. Yeah. And that's always my, and that's my thing always with looking to the past and all that stuff is like, I need to let my past be a lesson to the future. So what can I glean from my past that I can take forward to build to my future? And it seems like the easiest one is the one that everybody wants, which is go get me a quarterback, which is the statement that I feel like should be right under welcome to Cleveland. Moses Cleveland founded in whatever year it was. Go get me a quarterback. Like, I feel like that. I feel like that's where we have been since then, because it's the path of least resistance.
But in their defense, they've tried. They've had 39 different quarterbacks here. Like, it's not like they're not trying. They just can't find the guy.
So if I'm sitting in a room with Myles Garrett, I got to give him a guy. I can't just sit there and go, right, we're going to find a quarterback, because he's going to look me dead in the face and go, dude, I've been here for 8 years, and you've been feeding me the same hogwash for 8 years. Who's the guy?
I couldn't tell you. I'll be honest. Well, here's the thing. Not only can I not tell you, Dan, but I don't know if there is a guy this offseason, and I don't know if the Browns are positioned, even if there was a guy, for them to go get said guy.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you hear the analysts and everything, Kirk Cousins, or maybe Sam Darnold if he becomes available. Maybe those guys could patchwork the thing. Look, I honestly, this is what I would do this offseason if I were Andrew Berry. And I'm having to sit down with, I call it the Brown Circle of Trust. That's the ownership and their leadership committee that makes the big organizational decisions, okay? I would sit down with the Circle of Trust, and I would tell them, Kevin Stefanski is going to tell us who the quarterback is next year. And then I'm going to go get that guy. Like, that's what I would do. Because Kevin has never had his guy. I think Joe Flacco is the closest that he's gotten to a guy that has the traits that Kevin is looking for in a quarterback to run his system. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to go back to running Kevin's offense next year. Kevin is going to be empowered to do as he sees fit with the offense and the football team. What Kevin asks for, me as the top football executive, I now am going to go do it. We're not going to sit in here and do a collaboration, and we're not going to him and hi and debate players. No, what Kevin wants is what Kevin is getting this offseason. That's how I'm going to approach it, because I got to do everything I can to make sure that Kevin can be successful instead of forcing Kevin to have to adapt to whatever I give him. Because, look, with all due respect to Baker, I don't think was Kevin Stefanski's prototypical quarterback. Deshaun Watson is not Kevin Stefanski's prototypical quarterback for his offense and what he wants to do, right? They're constantly trying to adapt and tweak so I would that's what I would do this offseason. Kevin, whoever you want, make your list of the top three guys that are acceptable for you to be your quarterback, and then I'm going to do my best to go get one of those three guys for you so you can do what you want to do next season with your offense.
That's a really good idea. It's about the direction that I was thinking. The guy who popped in my head, D, was Derek Carr. If the Saints were to move on from him, go get me Derek Carr. Go hire Clint Kubiak as an OC, and let's go.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have to dumpster dive for a quarterback this offseason. There's no question about that, right? Because there is no guy that's going to be available they can go trade a couple more first-round picks for, right? And they certainly can't afford to go out and give a significant contract to anyone, because they're just going to have to bide their time for at least 2 years to get out from underneath the Deshaun financial obligation as well as the salary cap obligation. So you do that. Derek Carr, if that's who Kevin wants, fine. If it's Sam Darnold, if he becomes available, that's fine. If it is Kirk Cousins, even though, if Jameis wasn't benched, Jameis would challenge him for the league lead in interceptions, whatever. Like, whatever Kevin wants and needs, that I think needs to be the first priority, especially if you're sitting there saying, hey, we all, and I don't anticipate that ownership is going to do this, but if you're sitting privately and saying, hey, we all share in the failure here, and that's why we're not firing anybody, and making wholesale changes because we recognize our contribution to this disaster, we're now just going to let you guys go ahead and do whatever you feel like you need to do as best to fix it, and we're just going to step back. Like, that's, I think, what needs to happen, and I think what Andrew Berry needs to do is just, again, whatever Kevin Stefanski wants to do at quarterback, Andrew Berry needs to do his best to go ahead and make that happen for him.
All right, buddy. I appreciate your time. I got one silly question for you to end this bad boy with, just in the holiday season. What's the best Christmas present you ever got? What's the one that stands out in your
best head? I'm going to go back to my childhood just because, we're adults, whatever.
Exactly.
I'm going to go because I was really into Transformers as a kid. I got a really cool Transformer Optimus Prime toy it was the metal toy with the trailer that also, you could transform or whatever. I thought that was the most bad you-know-what thing you could get. Yeah, I wish I still had it to this day because I would be really filthy rich because it's worth a ton of money. But, yeah, that it probably was the coolest gift I ever got as a kid.
That's a really good one, man. I got an electric guitar in sixth grade. That was the one that will forever stand with me.
Oh, very nice.
I got an electric guitar.
Very nice. How many windows did you break playing it?
My parents tolerated the horrific noises that came out of it, you know. That's the way that it goes. And now the noises are slightly less horrific, but still pretty bad. So, anyway, buddy.
I was going to say, did they pad a room for you?
God, they should have. They really should have for a lot of different reasons. Anyway, happy holidays to you. Happy New Year to you. Enjoy the rest of practice. Thanks for the time, Daryl.
Same to you. You bet, Ben.
See you, buddy. And that is Daryl Ryder, our Cleveland sports reporter, with a lot of good stuff in there, all about what he would do in the offseason, all that. We'll react to what D had to say. And then also, is not quitting enough to keep a job? Is the guys around you not quitting enough for you to keep a job?
If Miles was to be traded, it would be to a Super Bowl contender. Honestly, it hadn't even dawned on me the idea that he could be traded to the Giants, Browns, get their franchise quarterback. But it just felt so heartless to me. It felt so cutthroat. And if I'm Andrew Berry, I don't have to have feelings for Myles Garrett, and I think that's the difference in this conversation. Me and you, Jake, we have feelings for Myles Garrett because we've known him since he entered the league, and we've been Browns fans and watched him and watched all his highs and his lows up until winning the Defensive Player of the Year. But if you're Andrew Berry, I mean, that is your job, and I think sometimes we get that confused. Like, everyone's like, oh, do right by the player, do right by, well, I ain't got to do right by keeping my job as well, you know? And I know the Browns have done a good job of doing right by the people around them more times than not, a la letting Callahan go coach for his son in Tennessee. Little scenarios like that, but it's on the table. And if I'm Myles Garrett, you don't have a no-trade clause. If I'm Myles Garrett, I wonder if he would be willing to go to one of these teams and be, you know, with open arms. Because in my mind, if I'm him, I would not be pleased that these are the conversations that people are having.
Do you think that genuinely makes a difference in, like, free agency? When teams see, like, if you're not willing to do right by Myles Garrett, you're not willing to do right by anybody. I mean, he's the best defensive player in the league. He's brought you 8 years where he's been the cornerstone of your defense, making all of the impact you could possibly imagine. If you're not going to do right by him, you'll do right by nobody.
Sure, but if you don't have a job, then it doesn't matter who you're doing right by or wrong by anyway. Like Andrew Berry, and this is it's an important note. When you're at this point of Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, you've got to make cutthroat moves. You've got to make moves that might, I mean, these are desperation moves, but you got to make moves that will be things you never thought you could do or would do when you're, you know, when your seat isn't warm. They're legitimately coaching, and then in the case of Andrew Berry, every move he makes is to, in order to keep his job and to extend it out, because if they have a bad season next year even, they're gone. That's it. You don't get a million opportunities of this. And listen, Stefanski might have another job somewhere else, but Andrew Berry, the one making decisions, this might be the only time he ever gets to do this.
I just feel like when you get into that situation now where we're putting, and it's going to happen, I mean, it's their jobs, but you're basically coaching and managing out of desperation and trying to make something happen, more likely than not, you end up putting the Browns in a worse situation than when you left it, right? Like, you're going to go and try to make every single move in a point where the Browns rebuild.
Well, but think about it, though. If they love Cam Ward, and let's say Cam Ward is the guy or Shedeur Sanders is the guy, if they love that quarterback and the Giants, for whatever reason, don't, or the Giants look at it the way Colin described it as, how much do you owe Myles Garrett in this process? Because if they love this guy and he's the only way of getting it is trade Myles Garrett to move up to number one overall, it's an interesting situation they find themselves in. Because I don't know that you have to do right by Myles in that instance. I don't know that you have to. I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is, That's good practice, right? Like, and that'll, you know, how you treat people comes back and matters and all that equation. But if the difference is either having your job or not having your job, people become really cutthroat in those moments.
Does that make a difference to a free agent, though? Like, if it was Andrew Berry who didn't do it, then does that turn
doesn't
into...
matter. If Shedeur Sanders is Patrick Mahomes, none of it matters. Because people want to come here anyway. If Shedeur Sanders is that guy and you think he's that guy, and he becomes Patrick Mahomes, he becomes Josh Allen, people line up the door, out the door, to go ahead and play for those guys. They don't care how you treated a free agent or not. They don't care how you treated a legend or not. And you know what? Browns fans, in turn, if that was the right move, they'd fall lockstep over that as well.
Yeah, no doubt they would. I don't know.
Like, sucks. Myles Garrett wouldn't come back to the Ring of Honor 10 years from now. Not great. But if he really is Josh Allen and Shedeur Sanders is that great and this is why you made that move, then it doesn't really matter, does it? Because you're not going to want to remember the Myles Garrett years anyway. Like, that's always been the hard part with the Joe Thomas stuff, is the Joe Thomas years are great only because of Joe Thomas. But we don't want to think about those years. We don't want to remember those years often. Myles Garrett's going to be the same thing if everything does go right. If everything goes right, you're not going to want to remember a lot of the Myles Garrett years because it'll just be the time you were in hell before the team took off. But you got to get these things right. Because if you don't, even if you trade Miles and you do burn that bridge, and then Shedeur Sanders does stink and your evaluation is wrong, well, guess what? You're out of a job. The fan base hates you. They get pissed at the fact that Myles Garrett won't come back and do anything with you. And that's the end of the world, essentially, in many ways, if you're Andrew Berry. But in Andrew Berry's eyes, you got to think about it from his perspective. It's either have a job or don't have a job. He's trying to keep his job. I'm just saying it's on the table. Yeah, it's on the table. It's something I hadn't thought about, and I think it's on the table.
I think it's out there. One, I don't think the Giants even make this move, because if the Giants make this move, you basically turn into the Cleveland Browns. You have no quarterback, but you have Myles Garrett, and you're like, oh, this is fun. This is a good time. I have nobody to play. Welcome back, Drew Lock.
Well, a lot comes into this, right? If they don't love Shedeur Sanders, if they don't love Cam Ward, and yes, there might be red flags as to why they don't love one of those guys. Maybe they just love Arch Manning, and they're willing to wait a year and see what Kirk Cousins can do. Maybe they're more patient than what Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski currently can be. There might be more to that. I mean, think about it. They probably aren't going to have... They might. I don't know about Brian Daboll. They might. Joe Shane might be out of his job as well, though. It might just be a different circumstance. You know, if they bring in a new GM, a new head coach, they might have more patience. Because more patience in the NFL typically means more years you get to be employed as well. If you can kick that can down the road when you first get a job, more years than you get to have that job, and that matters as well. 216-474-0092. I don't think Coward's talking crazy. It's an avenue we hadn't explored, which is interesting because 3.5 days into this, 4 days into the Myles Garrett discussion, I figured we'd turned over every stone we possibly could, and there's just new things that continue to pop up. Ben up next. What's up, Ben?
Hey, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Like you two, I'm just enraged that we're even talking about this. In my opinion, they're going to lose a lot of season ticket holders after this season. If they trade Myles Garrett, they're going to lose a lot more. You cannot trade a Hall of Fame player who's been as good as he has to the community. And I think we took a giant mess off of Houston's hands. I think somehow or another Roger Goodell had to be involved for us to take that mess off of Houston's hands. And I think at this point, with where the Browns are, Roger Goodell needs to get in there and broker a trade for Deshaun Watson and get us back to where we were a couple years ago. This fan base cannot endure another rebuild. It makes no sense.
I'm curious, and thanks, Ben. I appreciate you, and happy holidays. I don't know if it's going to be a rebuild. I don't know if they're going to try to build on the fly. There's just a million different avenues that they can take this, including what we're talking about with Miles.
Well, if you trade Miles, it's a rebuild.
If you trade Miles, then yes, you planted your flag down. You've decided what you're going to do. But that's what's interesting leading up to it, is that we just don't know. We don't know how far away they think they are. Like, Albert's going to join us in 10 minutes. Albert's of the belief that just as quick as you went from 11 wins to now 3 wins, you can go from 3 wins back to 11. Not everybody shares that same sentiment, but in the NFL right now, and nobody knows the NFL better than Albert, in the NFL right now, look at the amount of teams that really are going up and then down and then back to up again. Like, it is a thing you can do. And typically, you have a quarterback to at least lean off and start with. Anthony in Cleveland. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, guys. I was just, as I've been listening, I was calling in to say I disagree with you, Jonathan, about, them trading Myles Garrett, or that notion, not saying that you came up with the notion, but the notion of trading Myles Garrett and to New York to get, the number one pick and then choosing your quarterback. I just want to say quickly that's whoever the Browns were to draft at number one, if it wasn't a quarterback, it's a 50-50 shot. I think we all have to remember that person may be a good or a bad player. And two, like you were saying, or I wanted to point out, if everybody came back healthy, and besides Deshaun Watson, but if everybody came back healthy, and do you still think that this is a Super Bowl roster?
Yeah, I don't right now, and that's sad to say.
So you didn't think that before the season started this year?
I had him at 11 wins. Yeah, I mean, I was just wrong about a lot of it. But that Anthony, that also came with the idea that Nick Chubb could be something close to Nick Chubb too. There's a lot that went into that. The offensive line could be way better than the offensive line was. Like, the roster going for next year is going to be a little bit different.
Sure, but
We also had Amari Cooper. We also had Za'Darius Smith. Like there's a lot of pieces that aren't on this team that were on the team week one that is different.
Well, I mean, Za'Darius Smith, I don't know if he makes or breaks the team. I will say they do need to improve in certain areas, like Emerson can be gone.
That's another thing. Emerson going into this year I thought was great. Now I don't think he's great.
Yeah, but even though he hasn't been great this year, and I will give you that, I still feel like if everybody came back healthy next year with a quarterback that people thought could get the job done, then this roster, despite what people think about Deshaun Watson, this roster is still set in place to be a Super Bowl roster. That's what I think people are forgetting, that we all thought that this team had Super Bowl aspirations at the beginning of the year. And I know you named a couple people not having good seasons this year, but I just think, like you said, next year could be the bounce back year. So let's not, throw the baby out with the bathwater just yet. And I'm not a Kirk Cousins fan, so let's not do him. I'm more of a Justin Fields fan. But this roster is still Super Bowl ready, in my opinion.
All right. Thank you, Anthony. I mean, right now, I don't know, Jake. They don't feel very Super Bowl ready. I'm here for the discussion that they can get back to 8, 9, 10 wins if you get the quarterback right. But you got to get the quarterback right, and that's a big if.
Yeah, I think – and a lot of the scenarios that you go into next year, you're probably sitting at, like, anywhere from, like, 5 to 8 wins, right? Any of the guys that you lay out, whether that's a rookie, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins, doesn't matter. That's the scenario you're in. It's, like, 5 to 8 because you just don't have – there's so many glaring gaps on this team that we weren't exposed to in 2023 that are clearly being exposed in 2024. The offensive line isn't good. You traded away pieces on the defensive line. The secondary is not what you thought it was. There's so many things. You have no running game. This team is not, they're not even close to Super Bowl ready. There has to be so many holes addressed, and I don't think you can do that in a year.
Yeah.
I don't think there's 1 year to do that.
Albert believes they're not that far off, though. Albert Breer, a different time than normal on Tuesdays because of the holidays. We got Albert coming up next. The latest on Myles Garrett also. What does he see with the future of this Browns team as well? It's Afternoon Drive. Jonathan Pito and Jake Monick with you guys right here on The Fan.
There's one part that I don't know that we're going to get to if I don't call it out now that I think's really interesting. The public sentiment, JP,
mm-hmm.
that it's all Haslam's fault, the Deshaun Watson thing. I don't know who planted that seed. I don't know how that seed germinated or who perpetuated it. It's the greatest gift to the Haslams and Barry Stefanski you can have because, one, differing reports say it isn't true.
Well, I don't know that it's a gift to the Haslams, by the way. It might be a gift to Barry Stefanski.
Well, no,
you think the Haslams like this
but
thing?
But if the Haslams don't want to fire Barry and Stefanski.
If they don't want to
read the room.
I also think they're going to hate the idea that this is what they're remembered for.
I think it's ownership. One thing I think they're smart enough to understand is that you can't necessarily control the narrative on ownership. Right?
For instance, the
Guardians have won more than anybody in town. It doesn't matter because there's one thing that is the narrative on the Dolans in town.
Yes. No, you're right in that you can't control the narrative, but I also look at the Haslams, and I think the Haslams are different than the Dolans. I do think the money conversation around the Dolans does bother the Dolans, but there's no fixing that. I think with the Haslams, part of the reason why I think they're pushing the stadium as hard as they are is because they want us to go ahead and find a different narrative, and they want to be remembered for something that isn't Deshaun Watson.
So what's crazy about all of this, because you might be right, by the way, I like that as kind of a working alternative theory. If certain reports, rumors, whatever it is, if the Ken and Anthony thing, which they've been pushing for a while now, is that Jimmy had to be talked into moving on
mm-hmm.
from Baker, and you can kind of guess where that goes from there. If that is true, how in the hell does Jimmy Haslam not get credit for doing something that, again, I understand the theory at the time, but like Jimmy kind of should still get credit because he basically let his football people do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And he went to like an extent that I don't think most owners would go to, which is to pay the first fully guaranteed $200+ million contract in the history of the NFL.
I mean, the joke that kind of turned into reality that when the move happened, Nick, I kept repeating over and over again was that if the Haslams, if it went sideways, they would take all the blame. And then if the Browns won Super Bowls with an S, we'd be like Stefanski and Barry, how they were able to talk an owner into doing something like this. And they just knew Watson was the guy. And it was a tough decision to move off of Baker, but they had to do it. And my goodness, what geniuses. And it was always going to end up being that way.
I agree with you, and I think what's interesting about that, though, is, like, one thing that I don't think people are giving credit to the idea of Barry and Stefanski, and how could you ever move on from these guys? They're smart people. It's the NFL. They're not the only smart people in the game.
Sure, yeah.
We don't question their intelligence because they went to Ivy League, which is a different kind of either privilege or ignorance, however you want to kind of to display that out. But how many people with an owner saying anything you want? That's all I ever hear Stefanski and Barry say. They support us in every way possible. How many people would get to the results that they've gotten right now? And I know the elephant in the room is Deshaun, and Deshaun stinks. You're not going to get, yeah, but who traded for Deshaun?
But also with the unlimited checks that they have supplied at their favor as well.
Well, but like it's weird, like, the Stefanski was forced to fire AVP, all right, who hired Ken Dorsey. Like every which way you go, it all somehow turns back to, well, it's just the Haslam's fault. And I don't think that's the case. And it does seem like the Browns. And I tweeted this out when Mary Kay was on with the Midday Show earlier this week, where Mary Kay's like, yeah, I think, you know, the big thing you're going to see is some changes in the coaching staff. And in my head, I'm like, if that's what the Browns are telling themselves is going to appease fans, because it all is somehow blamed on fans. Ah, the fans want their pound of flesh. Or a team massively underperformed, and when that happens, like this isn't a 7-win season, this isn't an 8-win season.
Yeah.
When you win 3 games in the NFL, asses get fired, and that's not about fans. But this idea, there's this, it's the connectivity stuff with locals, with that organization that I still find just like mind-blowing. Like this idea that you think anyone's going to look at this and be like, ah, it's all Ken Dorsey. Yeah, bleep that guy. No one's taking the bait. Who are you selling this on?
Because
if it's to people who buy tickets, those people don't give a damn about Ken Dorsey. Most of them can't name his damn first name, right? Like this is about Stefanski, Barry, and Dee Podesta. Have they got the job done in 5 years? And it's wild to me that this organization now at 3-12, likely going on 3-14, thinks that they can just go, hey, look at these assistants we fired. We found the problem, while also bringing back Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I want to go back to the owner conversation, though, because I think, you know how sometimes when you watch a team and you're like, they stink, and it's like, why do they stink? And instead of talking about the offensive line or the running game, and I'm talking about the Browns, I'm talking about like other teams, you're like, oh, well, Aiden O'Connell's their quarterback. They were never going to be good. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people do that with us, with the Browns. It's like, oh, well, start with the ownership. Why is there problems? Like I heard the other day somebody making the case for why Green Bay is always great. It's like, why is Green Bay great? Why do they go from quarterback to quarterback to quarterback and it always works? Because they don't have an ownership. So there's no one meddling. There's no one putting their fingerprints on anything, and they just get to make football moves and that's it. And in that same argument, they're like, why do you think the Browns always stink? It's because of ownership, and they don't just dig deeper. They never dig deeper into the Browns' problems. They just put it at the feet of Haslam.
So, all right. So let's play surface level versus...
And that's what I think it is. Like, why is it everyone just goes Haslam and they never bring it to anybody else's doorstep? And I think that's what it is. I think they just think extremely surface level when it comes to the Browns. And it's so easy to say Haslam's problematic. Haslam puts himself too involved, and you're never going to win with Haslam there.
So it's interesting, though, the two surface level conversations with the Browns, because I heard about this in my mentions after I tweeted out, like, man, this organization really thinks fans are dumb enough to accept firing Ken Dorsey as some sort of cure-all. And the number one thing I got, the number one and two thing, but who is the quarterback and who's the owner?
Yeah.
And the reality is, I think I think those are very convenient things for the Haslams, because then they can just accept the responsibility and go, it was our mistake. Hey, we got to get out of the way of the football people, right? That doesn't make me feel like you're any closer to solving what has led to this disastrous season. And I, in a weird way, because like even Ross was like, you give him one, just like Shanahan, you give him one lost season. Shanahan was in the Super Bowl. Shanahan has had consistent winning teams. I think since that first winning season, I think this is their second losing season in like 6 or 7 seasons. That's not the same as what the Browns have done. They've won one playoff game. 2 11-win seasons, and then now 3 lost seasons, with recent being your worst.
Shanahan went to 2 Super Bowls. What are we doing?
But like even that defense, I was like, I don't think that's a good defense. Like you're comparing one of the most respected coaches in the NFL who's got a resume to prove it versus a guy whose resume is two Coach of the Year awards
I do understand Ross's bigger point, and the bigger point being that you should give him an opportunity to see if he can make someone Sam Darnold, to see if he can make a nothing quarterback situation into something. And I agree with the people that would suggest that Deshaun Watson was not. That was not a fair opportunity for Deshaun or for Kevin to be able to do that.
Yeah, but again, like which version of it? The first one, the second time, now this third time? Like they've tried to attack the Deshaun thing from three different angles. What's wild is everybody just kind of wraps up the Deshaun thing as, it's a disaster, we didn't like him, get him the hell out of here.
The problem with the Deshaun thing is that we took it for too many years.
Yeah, I mean,
three years was way too long. I get why they had to do it, but we took it for too many years.
Well, okay, but then the restructuring of the contract this year, like, there's a few things about it. But again, like, that if you just go, well, the Deshaun thing didn't work, everybody gets a mulligan, then you're not asking yourself, did either of these guys have a hand in why it didn't work out? And we just put it all on the player because that's the easy thing to do because we saw him stink at it, not... Should they have changed the offense earlier? Was Kevin's own offense, did Kevin not coach Deshaun hard enough? Which is something Albert Breer has said on air here. Like, I gotta be honest with you, it does feel like a lot of people are just giving them the pass because they hate Deshaun Watson more than they dislike or distrust Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry. And that's fine, by the way. It's fine for a fan to do that. As an organization, if you do that because you simply like people, cool. You're not going to be any closer to being a consistent winner next year if you just run things based off of what the public will or won't tolerate.
I think the synopsis, though, is the idea that from a national perspective, a lot of people just do put it at the Haslams, and they don't go a little bit further. We go further because we got 5 hours a day, and we can actually pinpoint and find out how much blood should be on Stefanski, which, by the way, I've not said there should be no blood on Stefanski. I defend him. I want to give him another opportunity, but something falls at his feet. Something falls at Andrew Berry's feet, too. That's why I want him out the door.
216-474-0092. There's a few things we can get to here, but I'm just curious. Do you guys think it's the surface level stuff? Do you think it's Haslam and Watson, or do you think there are other reasons or additional reasons that the Browns are 3-12 going on 3-14? More on this and how far the Browns should go to keep Myles Garrett on 92.3 The Fan.